water and we're now learning to swim. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, H-U-R-Y-W in the sick net.
Hi there. You know, I checked in about 8 o'clock or so, give or take, and last week I tried checking in early and there was no internet connected to the repeater for about 20 minutes. So when I finally did check in, that's why I was a little delayed. My question has absolutely nothing to do with digital television, so are you done with that subject now?
Boy, are we done with that subject for the time being. Although, no guarantee in an hour from now it's not going to come back up again, Joe. You got the floor, Joe.
Okay, my question is with the construction of a particular UHF beam antenna that I have, I actually have two of them, and I'm having a bit of trouble tuning this thing. Let me describe how the antenna actually is inside. It looks like it's a folded dipole, resembles that. All the elements on the beam are through the boom type of construction. They're not grounded to the boom, none of the elements, even the what you'd call the driven element. The center coax feeds one element directly and then comes out to the back of the block assembly where the antenna connects to it with a piece of 75-ohm cable, about 11 and a half inches long, and that cable feeds the other opposite element, on the antenna. Now you have these two elements, these are skinny elements, feed the thicker element, which goes through the boom with the sliding blocks that are used for tuning it. Okay, so you get the basic idea of what this thing resembles?
Are you describing something like a T-match that's fed with a half-wave coax balun? Is that what I heard, Joe? Go ahead.
Well, it might be that. It's very possible. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the antenna. You should be because you're Mr. 432. These antennas originally were intended for the 420 megahertz band. I'm trying to use it in a little higher frequency between 430 to 440. But my problem is when I'm finding out the antenna is extremely reactive in tuning if you have a metal mast anywhere within one UHF wavelength from the driven element. It has to be much, much farther than that. And I intended to use one antenna at a remote location. And I really can't mount the antenna with the center of the antenna on the pipe and have one end sticking one way, one end sticking the other way. So is that just an inherent thing with the design of these type of antennas? Because I've never seen a Yagi react like this before.
Quickie.
You didn't say it, but I'm going to guess that the antenna is a Yagi that's vertically polarized on a metallic mast. And most 430 antennas are horizontal. So since you're going to the 440 band, it sounds like it's vertical polarization, repeater use. And so now the mast is co-polarized with the Yagi. Is that what's going on, Joe?
The Yagi was always built and was intended from the factory to be used as a vertically polarized antenna. Actually, it's intended to be a phased antenna. We have two of these things so many feet apart on a horizontal cross boom that supports the both of them. They're both, you know, intended to be aimed in the same direction. When this thing is put together, all the elements and sections, each antenna has, I believe, about 28 or 29 elements from one end to the other.
Quickie.
Okay, who's Quickie?
It's Gary again on your subject there. This coax, that 11 and a half inches of coax, is the shield grounded?
Yes, it is. It's a 75-ohm coax wire.
Okay, it's grounded to the boom?
Yes, it is. The shield is grounded to the boom.
Okay, good. I'm out of here.
Yeah, when it comes back to you, Joe, tell us what brand name the antenna is. But if it was designed to be a pair of them horizontally displaced, vertically polarized, mounted on a horizontal T-bar, and the center of that T-bar then gets mounted to the vertical mast, that's a beautiful way of making sure that there is no copolarized metal near the Yagi. When you mount a Yagi vertically polarized on a vertical metallic mast, life gets complicated. There are ways of readjusting the antenna to live in that environment, but that gets pretty elaborate. Some guys got away from the problem by mounting the hold-on antenna in front of the mast, mounted at a point behind the last reflector, Well, in your case, with 28 elements, I got a vague idea that your boom is 18 feet long, and you don't have that option. I can understand that. There may be no clean solution to this one, Joe, without mounting the antenna to a horizontal mast. Now, there's two ways you can mount it to a horizontal key mast. One is to really have a pair of these antennas side by side. Maybe you've only got one, and you don't want to go buy another one, and you don't want to build another one. I understand that. The other solution is to mount it to a horizontal T-bar, and the other antenna is a dummy. It's just a metal weight that's got the same mass, and it's got a sheet of metal to it to give it the same wind load. In other words, you use a sham antenna on the left-hand side of this T-bar, and your real antenna on the right-hand side. Slightly hokey arrangement, but it's one very sophisticated way of getting around the problem of the sensitivity to the co-polarized aluminum mast in the middle of a Yagi antenna. That's a tough one. That's a possible solution. I know it's elaborate, but at least consider it, Joe. So V2RYY, K2RYW.
Nice last name for you.
We had a triple that time. Let Joe go first, then I'll pick up the triple.
Okay, well, in the one location I plan to use this thing for my linking system to give me more gain back and forth, I really can't mount the antenna with the antenna sticking on the inside of the building. It's going to be mounted onto a pipe, and I can stick the antenna. It can be sticking on the pipe aimed at my home QTH, but I can't really have the antenna sticking out the other way on the other side of the pipe. So these type of antennas aren't going to work, and I'm probably going to end up using a Yagi, exactly like you said, that is mast-mounted behind the reflector. I have one of those already, but it doesn't give me quite enough gain, so I'm going to have to find something of a little bigger design that gives me maybe 12 elements, 14 elements, something like that, in the right frequency range, or if I have to trim it myself, I'll have to trim it myself. But these particular antennas, I can't use. I was just only asking the question because of I just noticed that these antennas, one of my that actually works correctly, is extremely sensitive to tuning. I could get return loss readings on the desired operating frequency of, depending on where I mounted the mast and moved it away from the driven element, I could get return loss readings of in excess of 35 dB. But I found it to be extremely sensitive as far as any metal moving back towards the driven element. So, for my particular application, the antenna really isn't going to work. It was more of a curiosity type of question, actually.
Now, there are people who solve that problem, Joe, by using a fiberglass or insulated mast. That's only a partial solution because you still got to bring the feed line up to the antenna. And the feed line is another metallic object that's co-polarized. And some guys got around that problem by bringing the feed line off the back of the antenna behind the reflector. And now you have a great big long hanging piece of coax until it finally comes back to some mast. I think somebody tried to sign in. Maybe they've got a suggestion. Who was that? K2RIW?
This is Gary here. I was going to say the same thing what you just said now because that's how I did it.
Yeah, it's only a partial solution, Joe, as you're going to find out, because if you make the insulated mast strong enough for a 28-element Yagi, it is so darn substantial that it's still got a significant dielectric constant to it. It's half as dense as the aluminum mast that you used to have, so you're still going to get a little bit of detuning. That's too bad you can't put a T-bone mast up there, you know, a horizontal mast that mounts to it, and then some range downrange on the horizontal mast it attaches to the real vertical mast. In the case of you mounting it on the building, you're now trying to put a piece of pipe coming out the side of the building instead of the top of the building to mount the antenna. Maybe there's a way. But the other approach you said is a 10 or 12 element Yagi. Well, a 10 or 12 element Yagi is going to be around 11 feet long. The cantilever, something 11 feet out there in space, is a interesting mechanical engineering problem. You want a certain amount of gain to make this link between these two fixed points. Consider the possibility of mounting two individual vertically polarized Yagis horizontally displaced if you've got the real estate to do it. That can give you quite a bit of gain without getting into real long booms. an 18-element Yagi is getting into a fairly long boom. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-H-U-R-Y-W.
The intent was I can take these antennas apart. If I take the driven element section apart from the rest of the antenna, it by itself only has 8 elements. If you add the rest of the boom sections horizontally, it goes up to 28 elements. So I can use it as a much shorter antenna than itself. I want to use it with the first and second section, which would give me a total of 14 elements. But still, I'd end up having to mount the antenna, mast mount somewhere in the center of that antenna assembly, or at least forward, from the dipole, probably about maybe 2 wavelengths or maybe more, I think, when I found out from doing tests in the yard. So the antenna, for all practicality, is not really going to work when I need to have it work with. I'm going to have to go out and just buy some sort of commercial application or find something that's going to be suitable for what I'm looking for. Now, being that I've got a tremendous pile of scrap metal, which is what this thing could really be called, instead of throwing it out, here's what I'll do to make a offer. Anybody who can contact me on QRZ, look up my call letters, look at my P.O. box with my address. If you want the antenna assembly, you can contact me and I'll give you in directions on how to come over and pick them up. Free. No money.
As they say, the price is right. That was W-H-U-R-Y-I, Whiskey Alpha 2, Romeo Yankee Yankee, who apparently is offering free of charge a 28-element 440 or 430 megacycle Yagi. Out of curiosity, Joe, what brand name is it?
Well, you got your facts a little wrong. Not one of them, two of them. These were two antennas that were mounted originally on a horizontal pipe that was mounted to a vertical pipe. You had a pair of these things. It must have been used as some sort of phasing transformer between the two of them with long coax leads. It was used out in an installation way out in New Jersey, about 50 miles away from the repeater site, and the guy wanted to make sure he could make the repeater site full quieting. He just about succeeded. My application is not going to work at all because I don't have the room to do the same thing that he did with them. So instead of turning up to junk, because I know the scrap guy will take them in a heartbeat, to go out, if I put them out there, if somebody wants them, you can have 2 28-element Yagis. One works, one don't work, and one got a little stepped on. But I have all the parts and pieces to them. Just come over and collect them.
Okay, the price is right. Alrighty, you've made the offer. It's a good-sounding offer. A pair of 28-element Yagis. They're tuned to roughly what frequency, Joe? Because it sounds like they might have to be moved to be used for ham radio. Over to you, Joe.
They were both with the intention of using it at about approximately 423 megahertz, so that's where they were actually used. So they actually did work down there. So to make them work on 432 would not take much work at all to make them work down, at that higher frequency band, or even higher up in the 440. A smart guy would be able to do it.
Question.
Go ahead with your question.
Joe, I missed your QCH there. Secondly, let's see here, what was that? Oh, yeah, okay. Now, a beam is great, 5-element, 6-element, 12-element. Okay, now, from what I've heard from Dick, I think maybe you told me, this to everyone. The longer the beam, the more you increase the elements on a beam to pass a certain point, the sides start coming out.
Good guess. On a poor design, yes. But on a good design, no. A properly designed Yagi, regardless of its length, when you tune it for maximum forward gain, the first side lobe for a horizontally polarized Yagi, the first E-plane horizontal Yagi side lobe in azimuth will be 17.5 dB down. The second side lobe will be 22 dB down. You adjust a Yagi for highest possible gain on a long Yagi. Those are the side lobe levels you'll get. You can make the side lobes weaker than that. You'll have less gain. You can make the side lobes stronger than that. You'll have less gain. Make the side lobes that level, with the rest of it all properly tuned, you'll have maximum forward gain for that number of elements on that boom length. That's what I said. Back to you, Gary.
Okay. All right. Still waiting on Joe's QTH there. Well, at that point, I guess you left out, or maybe I didn't hear it. I don't know. Proper leads, manufactured beam. Okay. Oh, you know what? Wait a minute. Before I unkey here, I want to drop down to my low power setting and see if you still get me here. Just a minute. There we go. Am I still doing 95%?
You went from 95% to 90%. Still a very acceptable signal. And Joe lives in the Sayville area. I think I've got his address correct. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah, but I'm not going to give my address, email, or phone number over the radio. I just don't do that kind of stuff. So the easiest way for someone to contact me is look at my call list, like QRZ.net or whatever it's called. I have a PO box rule in mail. Drop me a line there, and I'll give you the contact information via mail, and you can decide what you want to do from there, okay? That's my offer.
Loud and clear. Okay, we got that. Anybody with any fills required, give me your call letters right now. Okay, there being none, I think we've gone down the list of the people who signed in and said yes, they had a question. If I'm wrong, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW and the TechNet.
KB2 Sugar Queen.
Mr. Sierra Quebec. Is that Frank? No, Paul. I think it's Paul. And did you give us a yes in the beginning? Go right ahead, Paul.
Okay, good evening. My question was on the, and I think you partially answered it, but I've got the Yaesu VX7R, and I had it programmed for Channel 7, and of course, as you said, 12:30 on the 12th, it went out. Is there a possibility, or do you think any of the newer radios will come out where we could pick up Channel 7 or 9 or other channels? I was using the 179-800 for Channel 7 on my Yaesu VX7R, and no more.
Yeah, what has happened, Paul, is that Channel 7 used to be on something like 174 megacycles or 176, I keep forgetting which, for their analog and their UHF transmission for digital, I think was 33, maybe it was, oh no, it was 56. It used to be channel 56, real RF UHF channel. That's where digital took place before the changeover. After the changeover, channel 7, I got the wrong one, I'm looking at channel 2. Got to look for ABC. There it is. They were on channel 45. They were on UHF channel 45, digital, before the changeover. They're now back to real channel 7. The analog frequency that they used to have is now the digital frequency, real channel 7. So if your antenna will properly channel, operate at 174 megacycles, you should be getting the new digital television reception on channel 7. Maybe I misunderstood you, Paul. Back to you. KB2SQ, K2RIW.
Yeah, I was picking it up on the Yaesu handheld VX7R, VX7, and I had that programmed in 179.800, and I could listen to Channel 7 there, you know, around the city, and when I moved up, when I was driving along on my car radio, I mean, in the mobile, so, but it left, so. I've tried a couple other frequencies, but none of them work.
That's exactly what's supposed to happen, Paul. Okay, you've done the same thing I did. One of my scanner-like radios, an IC-R7000, I had programmed into it all of the sound FM modulated frequencies for all of the local television channels. Those FM modulated audio portions of the program, that went along with each television channel no longer exists. When they went to digital television last Friday, not only did the pictures become digital, the audio became digital. And the audio and the picture are not separate digital channels. They're all scrambled together in one great big pile of packets. So unless you have a digital converter made for digital television reception built into your RX7, or I think it was a DX7, your receiver, unless your receiver has the demodulation code digital capability of a digital television converter box, unless that function, unless those chips are built into your radio, no way in hell are you going to get that audio. It's a valiant effort, Paul, but it ain't going to work. You and I are in the same boat. KB2, Sierra, Quebec, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okie dokie. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it for that. I kind of gather that listening to the other conversation, the information that y'all were talking about, that it's gone bye-bye. Okay, thanks a lot. I'll be listening in the listening mode, KB2 Sugar Point. Thank you.
Yeah, you live right in Manhattan. You're living in a strong signal area. And so you should get it like gangbusters. If it was an analog signal FM modulated ready for your particular radio. But this is a pure brand new digital mode, and it takes some very fancy integrated circuit chips to suck the audio out of that great big mishmash of all the stuff that's transmitted. That channel that's now transmitted, Paul, not only is it video and audio mixed together, but in many cases it is not one audio and one video. It's about four separate audios and four separate videos, all combined together, mishmashed into those packets of digital transmission that are flying by at roughly a 6 megacycle rate. So I'd like to believe that sometime in the near future, some smart amateur is going to say, okay, if you go to this particular vendor and you buy these particular integrated circuit chips, you mount them on this particular printed circuit board, or you buy this subassembly that we sell, and you plug it into your IF strip of your receiver, of your scanner, you now will get digital audio. I think that's possible. But to my knowledge, no one has done it yet. They didn't have enough motivation to do it. Yeah, I'm suffering also, because I used to be able to sit in the shack where I don't have a television set and at least hear the television audio. I can't do that anymore. Anybody have any further questions or comments? Give me your call letters right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
There's nothing worth watching on television anyway, so there's nothing lost.
You're sort of right, well, why? Yeah, he said, without losing anything, we're losing the picture. Well, it depends. If I'm watching a real nice nature or Nova show or a frontline show, and they're showing me documented material, or if I'm watching, I can't think of the guy's name right now, who's a real animal expert that you've seen on some of the talk shows from time to time. It used to be Marlon Perkins, but it's a new guy. And there are times when the picture is helpful. Joe, the B2RYY, go ahead.
This is a comment based on what I think one of the other early guys were asking earlier about channel 8, 10, and 12. 8 is coming from New Jersey. That's channel D. Call it on RFA, it's DT58. That's out of New Jersey. It's a public broadcasting system. 10 is TNH from New Haven. They're broadcasting on channel 10 digital. I can't pick it up because it's back of my beam. And the only channel 12 I know around here is WHYY in Wilmington, Delaware, which I just got the other night, and they're also transmitting digital.
Yeah, 11, for instance, from Connecticut is WTNH, and it's an ABC affiliate, and they claim to be channel 8, but they're really RF channel 10, and so on. And so once we put up a reasonably good UHF television receiving antenna that can clear the trees, and it's got a rotator, and we rotate to the north, like Bernie was talking about doing out there in Mastic, there's a lot of other television channels. I mean, we living on Long Island have sometimes falsely got the impression that all of our television must come from New York City. Well, that's a good place. Hartford's another good place. Rhode Island, I guarantee Rhode Island's got some good broadcast centers and so on. So, if you can clear your local terrain with a good enough aerial, and you are getting southern New Jersey, fantastic. That southern New Jersey signal that you were hearing, how long was it in there, Joe? How reliable is it? Or was it sort of a band opening at that time? For B2RYY, K2RYW?
Adelaide, I can pick up on a semi-regular basis. Some days it's there, some days it's not, but I can always usually see it as an indication it's there. Here's one for you. Being that everybody said that you're not going to see anything below channel 7 around here, I've tuned this channel 3's frequency on actually 60.3094, and I do hear a carrier. I can't lock up on the. I don't see any indication on my DTV decoders because my antenna is pointing west, not north. But I think there's something there, and I think it's from the FSB from Hartford. I think they are transmitting on channel 3 because I found them previously transmitting co-channel with a not co-channel, but simultaneously on a UHF channel. I forget exactly what the UHF channel was, but I think they're transmitting on channel 3. So they do hear a carrier on that frequency now.
Yeah, my guess is that channel 3 from Hartford is doing the same thing that channel 2 from New York is doing in channel 4. That is a continuous analog signal telling you how to hook up the digital box. And I'm guessing that Hartford's doing the same thing. Last night, I went back to a bypass mode for the digital converter and scanned my analog television set from channels 2 through 70. And I think I found 6 or 7 analog channels still on the air last night. 3, 6, 19, 60-something. 40-something. There's about 6 channels that I found. I think 59 might be one of them, or 61. But there's a number of them. One of these are shop-at-home services. A whole lot of these are...
They're low-power TV stations, Dick.
Okay.
And channels 2 and channel 4 are operating as nightlight stations. They have a loop of just how to hook up your DTV receiver, and that analog has gone away.
KC2QAQ.
Glenn recognized. First, Eric, channel 2 and 4 locally are telling us hour after hour how to hook up the digital converter box. What is your guess, Eric, as to how long they can continue to do that?
30 days.
30 days is what I think you said. Glenn, you've got it?
Yes, there's an interesting change I noticed from yesterday till today. Was last night when we were talking about some of these channels and the limitation of the low frequency into my antenna. I no longer have channel 7, so if channel 7 was still, as of yesterday, broadcasting on the UHF part of the band, now apparently they've stopped doing it, so I am getting a weak signal down in the VHF portion now, but I don't get channel 7 anymore. So in order for me to get now, let's see, 7... 13 and 11, I'm going to have a high-band VHF array added to my antenna setup. Just something I noticed, wanted to report on. KC2QIQ.
Yeah, that makes sense. Channel 7 digital, before they went back to the analog frequency channel, 174 megs, before they went there with their digital Friday afternoon at 12:30 p.m., they were transmitting digital on channel 45, UHF real 45, and I guess they've stopped doing it. And I guess channel 2 was digital 56, I think it was, yes, 56, and they flipped over to 33. You should be getting channel 2 on 33 UHF real. Is that true, Glenn? Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. I get a perfect signal on channel 2. Anything that's above, anything that's on the UHF spectrum, I have perfect quality on. Well, I'm going to give you the channel name, not the RF one. but the identifier like CBS Channel 2, I get NBC Channel 4, of course all the sub-channels. I'm getting Channel 5 and Channel 9. I'm getting Channel 21, and then after that there's a Channel 25, and then there's a group of Spanish-speaking stations that go up into the 40s.
Okay, 2 right now, you said you're getting it, and 2, sure enough, is coming in on 33. Your UHF antenna goes down to what frequency, Glenn? What's the lowest frequency you think your UHF antenna has reasonable response?
Well, in practice right now, I'm not detecting anything below RF channel 20.
And RF channel 20, I guess, is something around, 530 megacycles or so. You think that's the low end?
508 or 507.
Okay, so you don't go below 507, is that what you're saying, Glenn?
Well, it may have more bandwidth below that, but there's apparently there's a gap in between, the next closest channel. I think it actually works down to as low as 300 meg, but basically that's the last channel that I'm actually receiving.
Okay. Do you get a Spanish-speaking station called 63, which is WMB? W Mike Bravo Charlie. Do you get that one, Glenn?
Yes, I do.
That's really coming in on UHF 18. So you do go below channel 20. That's UHF 18 you're receiving, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about that, Dick. No, I do get that channel. That's what I'm saying. That's right about that point. I think when I originally measured the antenna before I put it up, it was somewhere around 300 megahertz was where 300 to, I think, 900 was the bandwidth on it.
By the way, there's a series of 3 or 4 websites you can go to where you give it your 5-digit or 7 or 9-digit zip code or your address, tell it how high your antenna is above the ground, and it'll tell you exactly what channels you should be getting, their affiliation, their RF frequency, their quoted frequency, signal strength, distance in miles, and so on. One of the fairly nice ones is called TV Fool, www.tangovictorfool.com. And you go to the right section of it, and it'll give you a great big list of all the signals you should be getting. There's other websites you can go to that not only tell you what channels you should be getting and what mileage, but it'll draw you a map and show you what compass direction the signal should be coming from. So if you've got an antenna with a rotator, it'll tell you where to aim to get those particular channels. So when it comes to finding out these crazy channel numbers, the quoted numbers and the real numbers, there's a number of websites that'll give you to it. And right now it's a bit of a mishmash for an awful lot of people. K2LAW listening.
Yeah, I think the next thing, though, Dick, is I'm going to be using a rotator. And when I build, I'm going to probably sometime during the week put together a VHF live periodic and put it together for at least the high end of the VHF band and then attach it with a rotator and move the antenna to a new location. Because right now it's just basically fixed towards Empire.
Yeah, me too. And I'm not getting channel 2 for that reason. I'm probably getting enough amplitude, but the multipath is enough that the converter says 50% of the time it breaks up. 50% of the time it's there. And just when the guy is saying something important is when it drops out. You know the way Murphy's Law is. Boy, we're going to have a lot of fun with television. There's going to be a lot of experiments going on for the next few weeks. I can see it coming. Okay, I think we've gone down the list. Did we forget anybody? Anybody want to have any further discussions on any of the subjects you've heard up till now? Or a new one? Give me a call. Let us right now. K2LAW.
VJB. No.
How about that? Hey, Kent, you're supposed to say yes to VA5VJB from the Dallas area. You're supposed to say yes. How much of all this jazz have you listened to? It? Did you just join us? Back to you, Kent.
K2GOT.
K2GOT is what it sounded like. Golf Oscar Tango, start of your name, sir. And correct me if I'm wrong in your call letters. You got it.
Hey, good evening, Dick. It's Howard, MGDOT. My neighbor of Mel's here. Just curious, I came in a little late. I had the same problem with CBS, so I know I came in late. I was wondering where the transmission from CBS television was coming from, because my roof antenna that I'm using, that I used to use for analog use, is pointed towards Empire as well, and I've had a tough time getting CBS.
Okay, that was a double that time, but we heard both guys simultaneously. Howard was telling us about the fact that he's not getting Channel 2, and I'm going to give him an explanation of that in a minute. And we're hearing Kent in the background. Kent just came back from a 9-hour use of his 6-meter antenna. And the unique thing about his 6-meter antenna right outside of Dallas is it is 1,600 feet above the Earth. He had the use of the local Channel 2 broadcast center antenna that's being slowly dismantled, and for the next couple of weeks he has access to the television Channel 2 broadcast antenna at the top of a 1,600-foot tower. And he put something like 50 or 100 watts on 6 meters and 432 into that during the June contest, the June VHF contest. And Kent was telling us that he had a bit of a band opening with that antenna, in which he worked people in places like Indiana and California, and had some pretty nice 6-meter openings. It's slightly disappointing to find out that that much extra altitude, 1,600 feet, you would think you'd let them to talk to the end of the Earth. Earth curvature gets to you real fast. And the antenna is designed with a tilt down to it, and he's using it below the design frequency, which might give him a little bit more tilt down. So the antenna has a slight tilt down to its antenna pattern, and even though it's omnidirectional, he doesn't have to aim it. And it's fed with 1,600 feet of 3.5-inch airline. And the airline has got a small fraction of a decibel of loss, even though it's a quarter of a mile of a transmission line, straight up in the air. Ken has mailed me some pictures of that installation. It's quite an eye-opener. Ken's been up on that tower, in fact, on a couple of occasions. So that's what Ken was giving us, a quick description of what he did for the last 9 hours of contest operation. Him and a buddy. Okay, what happened to you, Howard, is that, let me drop. What happened to you is that Channel 2, CBS television, analog was on 54 to 60 megacycles, and you've watched that for years and years. They were simultaneously, for the last 6 months or a year, transmitting on Channel 54 megacycles, Channel 2, analog, and digital on Channel 56, UHF. As of last Friday, sometime on Friday, probably Friday evening, they switched over to UHF Channel 33 for their digital. They called themselves Channel 2, the same CBS network from New York City. But you now have to have digital television reception capability for UHF Channel 33 in order to get what you used to know as Channel 2. They're using a temporary antenna. They're going to be changing the antenna and making an improvement. Right now they're using a temporary fill-in antenna for that Channel 33 transmission. You're not getting full strength. I've got a fringe area VHF UHF antenna on the chimney of my house on 300 feet above sea level land in Huntington, aimed at Empire State Building. I have near line of sight, not counting the trees. Because of the trees, I don't. I do not get reliable reception on Channel 2, which is really UHF Channel 33 RF as far as that's concerned. So maybe that'll give you a little bit of explanation of what's going on. And you're going to have a little bit more quality of your UHF antenna, a little high up. It's going to have to clear the trees. And improvements will take place. People are complaining most about Channel 9 and Channel 2. Channel 2 is 33 real. Channel 9 is 38 real, and so people are not getting Channel 9 directly as 38 real, but they are getting it as 5-2, which really is on the Fox network. Where's Fox on my little list here? Fox is WNYW and they're really UHF 44, but they're stronger. So that's a partial explanation for why you're not getting what used to be called Channel 2, Howard. K2, Golf Oscar Tango, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Yeah, thanks a lot. It's N2GRT. By the way, I recently hooked up the rooftop antenna I have up here on the roof where I live. I haven't used that antenna in a very long time. Since the early 90s, we've actually had cable vision here. And once in a while, I would actually hook up. It's been quite some time. The older TV sets to the antenna. I don't have the feed going to the house anymore. It's just in one room. So I was trying it out a few days ago when we got a new HD television and noticed that the quality of the transmission, I've been told from either through cablevision or satellite or Fios, whatever you have, is a little different than what you're getting on the air. I know this has probably been discussed before. Anyway, back over to you, Dick. And I was also listening on my handy-talky to WNBC New York, and they have it in both Spanish and English, the transmission about how to hook up your DTV to the television. Back to you, Dick. And TGOT.
Yeah, for the time being, for the next 30 days altogether, both Channel 2 and Channel 4 analog will be telling you how to hook up your digital converter box. And where you live in Brooklyn on 5th Street, and you're so darn close to New York City, I'm a bit amazed that you're not getting what's called Channel 2, which really is on Channel 33 UHF. So if that antenna on the roof has a reasonable transmission line going to it, and it's aimed in the right direction, I'm having a little bit of trouble believing that you're not getting enough signal in Brooklyn to get what's called Channel 2. What's your guess as to the condition of that antenna, and maybe after all these years it needs a feed line replacement? Back to you, Howard, K2LAW.
Yeah, Dick, it's probably been over 20-some-odd years. I would say at least a good 20 years since the feed line was replaced on it. I would tend to think it's either that or it could be very well be the antenna itself that's been up there many, many years. And as I said, it performed well on VHF. I don't think it performs extremely poorly, actually, in UHF when I used to try to get the channels above 31. And maybe Eric could elaborate on this, but I know 31, when I used to watch that, came in extremely well, but all the other UHF channels above that came in pretty poorly. So I would imagine the antenna probably wasn't working all that well in the UHF range.
Yeah, one of the things to worry about is that when the cable is old, almost everybody uses flexible coaxial cable. And flexible coax cable has an outer jacket of polyvinyl chloride. And if it's a quality cable, the dielectric is a foam material. You'll discover that when the cable is out in the weather for more than, I'll pick a number, 5 years, water slowly migrates into the cable. And the water sits there inside of the foam, and the loss increases significantly as you go up in frequency. So your particular piece of cable, which is well-aged and has been sucking up moisture all these years, the moisture will slowly migrate through that outer sheath of that cable. And therefore, the loss at UHF frequencies could be fierce. The possibility exists that your antenna has got more than enough quality if you just simply replace that cable. RG6/SAT is a very popular kind of low-loss, 70-ohm flexible cable. If you're really serious, you'll install as much of it as possible with hardline. That's the one cable that doesn't suck up water when it's got connectors properly installed on the end. But flexible foam-filled cables will all slowly let water migrate in, and their loss at the higher frequencies increases substantially. That's probably what's going on in my case. That particular cable going to that antenna on the chimney of my house has been there for 30 years. Wow. It's time for a replacement. I could pick up a hell of a lot more signal on that antenna even before I get around to putting the one at the 70-foot level on the tower. Back to you, Howard, for any other comments. N2GOG, KQLIW.
Okay, Dick, basically I've just used that antenna as a just something to experiment with television. I've actually played around listening or trying to watch some of the locals here that used to use ATV. I know I think there was a local repeater in the area that transmitted ATV, you know, amateur television. And I'm wondering now, with maybe a lot more commercial type of equipment for analog use, on the use, what kind of use hams will be making of it in the next few years. That should be interesting. That's about it, Dick. Back over to you. This is MTGOT.
There have been a couple of website articles describing the fact that amateur television in the digital age is coming along. There are a couple of pretty progressive hands that have gone and bought these chips that are inside of the digital converter box, both modulator and demodulator chips. And there are a small number of hands who are transmitting digital television, fast scan, live digital television today. I think most of them are in California. I haven't heard about groups in the New York area doing it, but there probably are. I'm not closely aligned with that group these days. In fact, all of a sudden I'm in trouble thinking of Mike Cirillo's call letters. Somebody will tell me, a guy who is very deep into digital television for the last 30 years who lives in Wantagh, named Mike Cirillo. If anybody's into digital television, there's a 50-50 chance he already is. So the progressive hands will be doing it. Anybody with any further questions or comments, give me your call letters right now. And if there's none, we'll, Mel will start telling us what his mail is like. KQRIW listening.
I have a comment if you'd like to hear some signal measurements I made before and after the changeover. You always like signal measurements, don't you, Dick?
Sure do, Joe. So, are you telling me that on Friday some of those signals not only moved in frequency, but changed in power output? Is that what you're saying, Joe? Go ahead.
I'm only talking about VHF TV signals, yes, and they absolutely changed in level.
Fire away. Tell us what you saw. And where were you standing when you made the measurements?
R7000. You know what that is, just like what you have. Nice commercial-grade type of variety type of receiver. And you would say that's a pretty good measurement source, correct?
In some respects, that radio is traceable to the Bureau, Joe. Go ahead.
Okay, here we go. Let's start with channel 7 first. I'll make this rather quick. 175.25. I got the video carrier in AM mode at a plus 20 over S9 reading. I got the audio in FM mode plus 10 over S9. When they went to digital on 174.3094, I now saw that carrier, because I can't measure the digital correctly, but I saw the carrier on that frequency at about S7 to 7.5. So there was that much of a drop. That's just channel 7. Want to hear the rest of them?
Okay, so it went from plus 20 to plus 7 over 9. You could say if that meter was thoroughly calibrated, they dropped almost 13 dB. However, I haven't actually checked the calibration on that, although you can do it by way of pressing the button that says attenuator. I believe the attenuator is very close to exactly 20 dB. That'll give you some check of the linearity. My guess is 13 and 11 did something very similar. Back to you, Joe.
Maybe you missed what I said there. I did not say 7.5 over S9. It went to an S7, say 7.5, between a 7 and 8, as far as S meter reading. That's what the carrier level dropped. So it went from a plus 20 over S9 to an S7 to S7.5. Okay? That's the level I'm talking about. That's quite a significant drop, measured with the same antenna within a matter of minutes.
that is a significant drop. And you've got a service monitor by which you can plug in various signal levels and calibrate that S-meter on your R7000. You will discover that almost all S-meters on commercial equipment are not as linear as they should be. They're all a little bit liberal. In other words, each S unit is supposed to be 6 decibels of difference, and on many radios, each S unit is only about 3 or 4 dB. But still, it is a reproducible, calibratable thing. And with your service monitor, you can find out exactly how your particular R7000 behaves. And once you measure one of them that hasn't been damaged, I'll bet you they're all within a dB or two of each other. W2RYY, KQRYW.
Channel 13, I was getting the video carrier 211.240 at an S9 plus 5 dB. Okay, it was about 5 dB over S9. And I was getting the audio on 213.240 at about S9. When they did the changeover on 210.3094, I now got that signal at a level of S6.
That's a lot of drop. So that's 3 S units plus 5 dB on the video. And it's the only thing we can measure. Yep, interesting. And I guess we got to be a little bit careful here. In the case of analog television, a high percentage of the power is in the video carrier. In the case of digital television, the equivalent of the video is now spread across the whole 6 megacycles. It looks like a bar tip. You've seen it on a spectrum analyzer. So because the distribution of energy used to be peaked at 1.25 megs above the low end of the channel, and it's now spread across the whole channel, that makes the readings you've got a little bit pessimistic before you count the fact that they really did drop in power. I think Eric just told us they went down to something like 2 kilowatts once they went over to digital. W2RYY, K2RYW.
Well, with this being the case of the UHF television transmissions that have been going on for, I think, more than 6 months, probably going on for a couple of years, this might be also the reason that a lot of people out here can't get them, because maybe they're at a distance where the analog signal is acceptable, watchable, sort of like, you know, it's okay type of thing. And now you went to a threshold point where the digital converter just simply won't look at what it sees coming in. It's just simply too low.
Absolutely. And it's got a peculiar characteristic to it. In the case of analog, signals gets weaker and weaker. The picture just gets lower, more and more snowy. And from the time you've got a snow-free picture until you are just barely not willing to watch it anymore, you can drop a healthy 20 decibels in analog. In the case of digital, it's a little bit more sensitive, that's the good news, but when you hit that threshold, it's less than 1 decibel of difference in signal strength on a pure signal with no multipath, less than 1 decibel of difference between a nearly perfect signal and nothing at all. An extremely hard threshold. And I think Eric has explained that to us as one of the mechanisms of that hard threshold is the fact that once the signal-to-noise ratio degrades beyond a certain point, the digital converter box can no longer establish a good frequency reference that it needs in order to do the demodulation. W2RYY, K2RYW.
KB1TZS.
I heard KB1ZZS or something like that. Give us the full call letters a little bit better and your name, sir. And then go ahead with your question or comment. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
Yes, the call is KB1 Kilo Bravo 1 Papa Zulu Sierra. The name is Bob Bravo Oscar Bravo. And I'm over here in East Hartford, Connecticut. My question is, the FCC, I know the FCC had mandated that the digital, I don't know if the FCC, it must have been the FCC, mandated that the digital TV has to be at a lower amplification than analog. And I'm just wondering why they would do that. I mean, obviously, the reason why The reception is so spotty and people can't get the same channels that they used to get. And why would they do that? And are they going to increase the power now that they know that it's not as effective as the analog signal? Yes, you?
The calculations for grade A and grade B area for television reception, the calculations indicated that they can use considerably less power out of the transmitter into a good antenna on the receiver side. So less power is required to get the same area. One of the reasons why some people are not getting good digital television is that digital television is making a hell of a lot more use of UHF channels. In the case of the New York City area, Bob, only channel 7, 11, and 13 are using the original upper VHF frequencies, 7, 11, and 13 from New York City. They're using the original upper VHF. Every other channel of all the 30 or so channels that we can get, every other one is using UHF. Quite a few people watch television over the air broadcast and make very little use of UHF reception. Now that they're more heavily dependent on very good UHF reception, and on top of that, not only is the UHF reception got to be similar in signal strength comparison wise to the analog, on top of that, the digital is a little bit more sensitive to multipath. In the case of analog reception, let me drop. Analog reception, when you get multipath, you get some ghosting. You see a dimmer image displaced to the right of the real image. There's only a limited amount of multipath that the digital converter can tolerate before it gives up. So there are a number of situations where a person is getting more than enough signal strength in amplitude, but because there's a reflection off a local water tower or a building or whatever, the converter that they're using is not able to tolerate that amount of multipath. The later and later versions of higher rev numbers, so to speak, higher generation, a generation 5 converter can tolerate a lot more multipath than a generation 3 digital converter. So you take the combination of UHF has a lot more foliage attenuation, a lot more cable attenuation if it's got water in the cable, and a lot of our cables have got water in them. So the UHF signal will suffer more because the water has got a lot more loss at higher frequencies and multipath. Some of the people who are getting more than enough amplitude for UHF signal RF reception, so if they should be getting digital television, are getting an amount of multipath that's not tolerable, and that multipath can in some cases only be accommodated by using a rotator on the antenna. If you have the ability to rotate the antenna, there's a good probability you'll find a direction where you're lowering the amplitude of the multipath compared to the real signal, and all of a sudden the converter comes alive. So some of what you're hearing is learning curve, some of it's equipment improvement, some of it's a lot higher emphasis on the higher UHF channels. KB1, BZS, I think it is, K2RAW. You got it, Bob. My name is Dick. You were very noisy that time, Bob, but with my earphones on, I heard you say, Papa Zulu Sierra. I think I heard you call it right. So, some of what you're hearing is learning curve. Some of it is the original installation, and a number of the broadcast centers, they're using what I call a backup antenna, a fill antenna, because they didn't have the ability to remove the main broadcast antenna for analog television before starting digital transmissions. They didn't want to spend the price of two separate radio towers, if you know what I mean. So, in some cases, the signal levels are going to be improving, and some of it's learning curve as to how we use our equipment and whether or not we need a rotator on our antennas. I'm discovering that I need better cable and a rotator. And I'm in what I would consider a darn good signal area, as far as Long Island is concerned. I'm not getting reliable channel 2. Anybody have any further questions or comments, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW.